Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here for the Analog Devices Fireside Chat. Very pleased to have CFO Dave Zinsner. So Dave, I wanted to start with just maybe kind of big picture, just the macro environment. Certainly, as we made our way through semiconductor earnings season, the results have been pretty strong and, you know, much better from just a year ago. So kind of, you know, what are you seeing from customers from a demand perspective, and then also in the channel, how a distributor is behaving?
Okay, yeah. So, clearly, you know, we just posted our results just a couple of weeks ago, and obviously, it was a strong result. You know, clearly, the biggest driver of our outperformance was the consumer space. But I would tell you that almost without exception, every market, every geography, we saw strength relative to last year this time. And that has continued on into our second fiscal quarter. So, you know, I do feel like the broader industrial business and automotive business have rebounded from, you know, I think a pretty soft period last year. I think capital spending is starting to kick back in many locations around the world, and we're benefiting from it. So just overall, you know, this looks good. And as you talk to customers, you know, across all the markets, I think they, you know, the tone is they feel incrementally more positive about the environment out there right now.
Got it. Anything to note within the channel? I mean, it's only a quarter or two since business has gotten better. So
yeah,
typically it takes a while for the behavior to change. But
one quarter is not a trend. That's right. It's again, it's also been strong. You know, we look at the shipments on or I should say the orders on us from distributors, but also the shipments out from the distributors to the end customers. And both have been strong. They've continued to be strong through this quarter as well. In fact, I'd say in particular, one of the more notable aspects of that is that the shipment out levels per week almost didn't deteriorate during the kind of back half of December and into early January, which they typically do. So it's been a good environment. The disties, I think, have you know, managed things pretty effectively. The inventory levels right now are running kind of 7 weeks, a little bit more than 7 weeks, which, you know, we like to see them kind of in the around 7.5 weeks. So, you know, they're on the leaner side, but not, you know, so lean that they would cause kind of widespread kind of inventory build. So our read is that the end customers are managing their inventories pretty well. And so we don't think that we're seeing inventory builds as a driver of why, you know, the industrial business is doing well. I think it's really coming from in demand.
Got it. So I want to shift gears just to the theme of M&A and consolidation, which has been very important for the space in the last couple of years. ADI certainly has taken a different tack in terms of how you evaluate M&A and more of a technology approach. So maybe we can start with kind of Hittite, and we'll segue into Linear. But, you know, what was it about Hittite from a technology perspective and market that you found attractive?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Craig. I think there are definitely different ways to go about M&A. I think for us, what we do is lead with technology first. And, you know, if it's large scale or it's a small tuck-in, that doesn't matter as long as the technology really is robust and, you know, at high performance. For Hittite, you know, what we were seeing in the marketplace in a number of different markets is a need for microwave and millimeter wave technology. You saw that in military or military communications. We were seeing it in instrumentation. We were seeing it in the automotive space for radar, going from 24 gigahertz to 77 gigahertz. You're clearly seeing it in the comm space, particularly as 5G will roll out. There'll be a lot more microwave and millimeter wave requirements. And so as we looked at that, we thought, okay, well, we got to build up that capability. It was a massive amount of engineers we were going to have to hire and then wait years and years for revenue to cover that expense. And so it became kind of a perfect, you know, perfect opportunity to do some acquisitions. And so what we did was we kind of looked across the whole landscape of companies that could do that and, you know, really just looked for the best one possible, and that's why we chose Hittite. So, you know, as we fast forward to today, the other key component of Analog that we were missing to build out our base of technology was power management, and it's kind of well documented. I think I've gotten probably 85 questions from you alone, Craig, on, you know, why we don't have a power management business. And so we understood that, but it was a matter of finding or getting the right one. And I think from the time I got there till today, we felt like Linear was the best fit for us. I think their approach to high performance was very similar to ours. Their focus on the B2B part of the marketplace was very similar to ours. And so, you know, it really, in this one, just required a lot of patience and just waiting for the right time. And good news is it was the right time for us. It was the right time for Linear to come together, and I think it's going to be an amazing combination.
Got it. Can we touch on the culture, I think, as we talk to investors? That's one of the more questions that comes up in terms of the two cultures and do an acquisition of this size. So, you know, maybe what are some of the things that both companies share from a culture perspective, and what are some of the things that are different about ADI and Linear?
Yeah, I would say, I think Vince has said it a number of times, I think he's got it dead on, which is that, like, the value system of the companies is almost virtually identical. It's, you know, we focus on innovation. We believe that at the end of the day, technology and performance win the socket. And so we put, I think, you know, relative to a lot of our competitors, more R&D into the business, and believe that that will generate products that carry, you know, higher margins and over time, you know, a better return on our capital. Like I said, that I think Linear also shares that same kind of value system. You know, our business processes are different. There are nuances around how each company compensates their employees that are different. There's a little bit of a different style in which the businesses are managed at Linear versus the way the businesses are managed at ADI. And so what we've done from the time we announced this acquisition at the end of July through today and until we close has really been to kind of identify those differences and look for ways to take the best of both, which is maybe we take a process from Linear in certain cases, maybe we take a process from ADI in certain cases, and maybe we come up with some hybrid of the two. But the idea is to blend the kind of the way we do business in a way that makes 1 + 1 equal more than 2. And I think, you know, we're not all the way there. It's, even after we close, it's going to take a good 12 months to get everything kind of aligned to what the new ADI is going to look like. But I think we've made a lot of progress up until this point. I think if you ask virtually any employee at either company whether they're excited about what the possibility is of combining these two companies, I think you're generally going to get a pretty positive response.
Got it. I got a few more on Linear, and I definitely want to get to the core ADI because I think the performance has been really robust. So just when you think about the combination, net leverage, I think at the time you announced the deal, kind of high threes, certainly your own free cash flow has been much stronger, EBITDA has been stronger. So as you think through kind of a closing, how do you frame kind of where leverage shakes out, and then really how quickly you think you can get to that kind of 2x level?
That's actually really perceptive. I mean, our fourth quarter, we were well above $400 million in free cash flow. This past quarter, we were in the 290 range. So we've exceeded our expectations in terms of how much cash we could generate. And also, Linear's been doing pretty well, too. So we're going to close this acquisition with way more cash than we had originally expected. Now, there's about a $5 billion term loan that we have, and we were likely to draw all of that down initially because we got to get all the assets in the right jurisdiction, and that takes a little bit of time. But I think you'll see us rapidly pay down the debt this year. So we're likely in the back half of the year to pay down almost $1 billion of that $5 billion term loan just in the first year. So, you know, on a kind of a net leverage basis, we're probably more like a 3.3 on, you know, debt to EBITDA, you know, kind of pro forma post the close, with a fairly rapid decline in the leverage ratio. So, you know, our target is to get it to 2, and then the 2 kind of kind of leave that in check and start to kind of reengage on the buyback. My guess is I think we were originally thinking that by late 2019, early into 2020, we'd be at that 2x leverage ratio. Most likely, we're looking at kind of late 2018, early 2019, we'll start to see that kind of leverage ratio.
Got it. When we think about margins, even before Linear, you had kind of leading margins, but when you combine the two, I think without a lot of heavy lifting, you can get to close to 70% gross, 40% operating margin, free cash flow margins in the mid-30s. What does that mean in terms of the optionality around cash returns, the dividends of focus, the buyback?
Yeah. We're committed to the dividend. We're increasing it annually at a rate of 5%-10%. We just announced the annual increase for this year, which was a 7% increase. I think unless something unexpected happens that really blows up the economy, I think you'll continue to see us grow it at that kind of 5%-10% rate. We're going to hold back on the buyback, and use the rest of the free cash flow to de-lever. As I said, once we get to that kind of 2x, we'll start to reengage on the buyback, and we'll be back to our kind of normal philosophy around kind of a heavy cash return to investors.
Got it. Okay. Last one on Linear before we move on. Just when I think through kind of the integration planning process, kind of what has surprised you most? The second part is just from a revenue synergy perspective, what type of things do you think you can see in the coming years?
I think we assumed that there would be some challenges around the integration. I felt like we had a pretty good bead on the revenue synergies going into it. We had a fairly granular kind of roll-up from the due diligence, which got us roughly kind of $200 million-$300 million of synergies by kind of the 2022 kind of timeframe. I would say that I've been surprised at how enthusiastic the integration team is, which is a combination of ADI and Linear people, on what we can do on that revenue synergy number, such that they're talking numbers more like $300 million-$400 million. I'm not so sure you can take the specific number to the bank. It's a little bit of an art, not a science. The fact that everyone is so enthusiastic about this combination and how much we can bend the growth curve on a combined basis, particularly given the company's going to be a relatively large $5 billion-plus company, and as you point out, 70%+ gross margin kind of company, it's amazing to see the opportunity to really expand kind of the SAM of the combined entity beyond what I thought was possible. I'd say that was the biggest surprise more than anything that we have in front of us.
Got it. Now getting to the core ADI, I think the last two quarters have been quite strong. Any particular applications or markets that you would call out in terms of where you're seeing some inflections?
Well, I'd say the good news for us in the industrial space is the normal kind of bread-and-butter industrial businesses like factory automation, instrumentation, all grew nicely. I think that was a lot to do with just a pretty easy compare relative to the first quarter last year, which wasn't actually a particularly strong quarter. The aerospace and defense business continues to grow at a pretty healthy clip. I think when we acquired Hittite, that was the business we kind of valued the least out of all the businesses they had, and it's actually been an amazing business, as it turns out. They've been really able to leverage a lot of our technology into that market. The business that has surprised us to the positive more than any has been our healthcare business within the industrial space. It's not a particularly large business. It's probably about, I don't know, 10% of the industrial business. It had kind of trucked along there for a number of years at a relatively flat level, and we were pouring pretty meaningful R&D into that business, recognizing that it's got the normal kind of design cycle of an industrial space with the added complexity of a lot of times having FDA approvals and all that stuff. It's a real long time to revenue. Once it hits, it's really sticky business, and it goes on forever. So it had been a long time coming, and we've finally started to see the traction that we were expecting. So now that business has kicked up quite a bit. It's running now. It was kind of running in the kind of 150 range probably 5 years ago, and now it's almost to a $250 million run rate. So it's really performing well, and I think that's the biggest surprise to the business so far in the industrial space and probably the one that we were counting on the most over time.
Gotcha. And then when we think about IoT in the industrial space, what type of role is there for ADI? Like, where are you going to play?
It's huge. I mean, the whole factory automation and instrumentation space is really geared around IoT now. I mean, that is the kind of the macro trend. Much like the automotive space, which is now increasingly, and we're kind of used to it, all these sensors going into cars that have become so sensor-laden, and then some central brain to process all that information and react in certain ways. The industrial space has had some of that, but it hasn't been as meaningful a shift in SAM as the auto space. I think that's starting to change. I think it's becoming part of the macro theme is just huge sensor penetration into these applications within factories for preventative maintenance, for monitoring the device, the health of the device, or application. That's really kind of the trend now, and to pull all that data off and use it for analytics. And so we suspect that there's going to be a multiple of GDP opportunity for those that perform or that participate in the sensor space. And so we've been putting a lot of R&D into not only the sensor part of it, but also into the processing and connectivity and control and so forth. And so I think we have some relatively robust solutions that I think are going to hit just at the right time when the industrial space is going to go through a revolution.
Got it. And then maybe we can talk about smartphones kind of away from some of the core when we typically think about ADI. And having covered this space a long time, typically the high-performance companies, it doesn't end well, right? You get in there, and it's tough to sustain. So is there anything about the technology, what you're doing, that you think it'll allow it to be a bit stickier than we've seen historically?
You look at one of the earlier products we had in the smartphone with one of those leading smartphone companies we've had, I think, in seven generations. So it's not you can always participate in the consumer space and get that kind of good longevity to it. The trick is to pick the right customers, pick the right applications, and have the right technology, and have those all intersect in a way that works for you. And I think in the past, we've had instances where we have had that happen. We've had instances where that hasn't happened, and things have not gone well. I think as time's gone on, we've gotten smarter about reading the body language, quite honestly, of the customer on where we're hitting the mark, where there's real performance. And when you do that, you get a certain level of commitment from them to kind of keep you in the game. The dialogue ends up being different. You're talking engineer to engineer as opposed to Vince to the purchasing guy. And when it gets to that level, then you know you're in trouble. So I think we've played it a lot smarter than we have in the past. That's not there'll probably be sockets that where it won't make sense for them to pay what we're charging. And so those things might go away over time. But the trick in this thing is to continually find new places to innovate that offset and hopefully incrementally increase the dollar content that you have in given applications. On top of that, I think we got to be smart and be diversified in which customers we serve, but pick the customers that we think really value innovation. And that's part of what we're trying to do.
Any anecdotes on the pipeline, at least engagements you have that would speak to some diversity over time?
It's good. First of all, at the leading customer, we continue to have a very robust and active dialogue around other technologies that we can bring to their applications to do things that we'll see which ones pan out, which ones won't, but they're cutting edge, really cutting edge technology, things that you wouldn't ordinarily think of as applicable to a smartphone. Also, I think there are several other handset smartphone makers that, some in Asia, quite honestly, that have also desire to have some innovative technology. In fact, I think there was one at CES that mentioned our part. We're trying to just figure out which ones make the most sense, but the pipeline is good. In fact, I think Vince mentioned, maybe it wasn't this quarter, I think he mentioned it last quarter, that if you look at the pipeline, it kind of suggests that we could grow that business 10% a year. Now, maybe we don't try to do all those things. We want to kind of constrain the R&D to make ourselves really target the best opportunities. There's certainly room to grow in that space.
Got it. Last one before we open it up to the investors to ask questions. On automotive, certainly, you've talked about radar product and recently introduced. You also talked about kind of the A to B application. Can you talk about some of these incremental growth drivers?
Yeah. Automotive for us, if you've followed us long enough, you probably recognize that we had a huge kind of growth trajectory, and then over the last 2 years, things have kind of leveled off. That was somewhat by design. I mean, we had a huge position in passive safety, which essentially fires the airbags in most cases. That business really had commoditized to a level that, at least in certain subsegments of that, it really didn't make sense to participate. We've kind of whittled it down to really the part of the market that's really the higher performance part of that passive safety business. The rest of the markets that we've had were small on a relative basis to the passive safety, but all growing at kind of double-digit growth rates. You mentioned one, which was A to B, which is essentially a much more cost-effective way of delivering high-performance audio in a car. It takes out lots of weight, takes out a lot of complexity around wiring, and does it in an analog way with cheap kind of copper cables. You talked about, I don't know, well, you didn't mention AMR, but we also have AMR technology, which is kind of resistance on motors and steering that can be done in a silicon solution. We have that capability. You have what is now 24 GHz radar for ADAS moving to 77 GHz, which we now have a part for as well. We also acquired a company last year in the LiDAR space that, together with our signal processing technology, is going to dramatically reduce the cost of LiDAR. It won't be measured in thousands of dollars, that's for sure. All done in solid state. That will be a pretty big game changer, I think, to the automotive space in terms of providing LiDAR and kind of augmenting what radar and kind of camera technology does for autonomous vehicles. All of those things. At the end of the day, what it all is just more and more sensing penetrating into the automotive space. The dollar content, I think the SAM content for us at the high end now is running, I probably don't get this in any car, but it's running kind of $250 kind of range. We add Linear Tech to the mix. They probably add another $100 of content to the range. Just us alone, we have a high-end car, probably $350 worth of content opportunity. It's increasing at kind of a blistering pace as we move more and more to a more autonomous vehicle.
Gotcha. Are there any questions from the audience? I got one up here first.
Hey. Don't know if it works. Now it does. About the cost synergies with regards to Linear, right? What you see in terms of cost synergies right now, and then if you look at the, let's say, OpEx to sales model of Linear is quite different from yours. They tend to have quite higher OpEx to sales than you do. How do you plan to go about this, both in terms of R&D, in terms of S&M, G&A? What's sort of realistic to expect?
Okay. So on the synergy side, we had said we thought we could do $150 million of synergies, and $150 million on just on Linear's expenses looked a little high. But when you combined it with ours, because we thought there was opportunity to reduce costs on our side, you know, it was basically 5% of our total spend on a combined basis. We have pretty much in the bag about $110-$115 million already identified, and most of the actions have already been taken. In fact, we announced a restructuring on the ADI side just this quarter. So, you know, the other 40 is a pretty easily achievable kind of blocking and tackling kind of thing. You know, just better scale, you know, better purchasing power, more homogenized facility footprint, those sorts of things. I think it'll be pretty easy to... In fact, I think I said on the call, in my exact words were, "It's a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk. We've got the $150 million." Longer term, I would tell you, our goal, at least in the next couple of years, is to get us down, on a combined basis, down to 30% OpEx as a percent of revenue. And, you know, just looking at, if you take some of the areas where we were particularly efficient in terms of spending, I think we can do that across both companies. And in many of the areas where they were actually pretty efficient in spending, I think we can take that into our model. So I think 30% is a good near-term target. There's probably, if we get the growth going in the right direction, which I think we should, there's probably an opportunity to take that down even lower. And I think in the Analyst Day, we'll probably give everybody a more refined look at that. But I think the good news is there's good leverage in a model that already has spectacular operating margins.
I think we have time for one last quick one.
When do you expect to get MOFCOM approval, and do you have any visibility into that process?
It's a little bit of a black box. We thought that we would be all finished with this by the end of April, and I think we're pretty confident, you know, based on how the process with MOFCOM has gone, that we will finish by the end of April. I don't see any reason why we won't. You know, well, basically, they have a report they've got to write. It's a pretty significant report, pretty extensive and pretty detailed, and we have to kind of help them, you know, kind of fill in a lot of the blanks, which we've been doing over time. And it's slowly kind of, you know, gotten to the point where I think they've gotten all their questions answered, and now it's a matter of, you know, getting the report done. And it's been very constructive, and, you know, we haven't seen anything that would indicate that, you know, they've got an issue. So I, you know, I would suspect it certainly happens by the end of April. You know, maybe happens hopefully a little quicker than that.
Okay, I think we'll wrap there. Dave, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.